rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello everyone, it's Stephen Jones from the Sunday Times. There are two wrecks this week, as there normally are in the week before the international start. Monday was the curtain raiser, with some fading talent such as Owen Slott and Lawrence Denalio. With the curtain raiser over, here is the main event. This Sunday there are three games in the Women's Six Nations, in France, in Wales and in Ireland. And amazingly, I hear that there is a 17-year-old lock called Morwenna Tallinn in the England squad. Blimey, the policeman may be younger. No, so the locks are younger too. The panel today are only comprised of all-time greats. They've got 8,000 caps between them. Giselle Mather is the best-known women's coach anywhere, but would be really insulted to be labelled a women's coach because I was just about to say she had great success with men. But, I mean, she's been involved in the development of many, many great male players, so it is ridiculous to categorise her in one sex or another in terms of her coaching. She's director of rugby at Wasps Ladies, was recently honoured by the Rugby Writers Club. What did we give you?
A tankard,
yes.
It's lovely.
Is it?
Yes,
is it
I was really chuffed.
A great big foaming pint tankard.
I was
tankard.
Really chuffed.
Were you?
Yes.
Okay, well, we haven't quite got around to getting anyone something you might not want a huge tankard, but it was the thought that counted. And I was really sorry I wasn't there to see it. Also, we got Marley Packer, described in the papers as a talismanic England flanker. You could even say, I think, a volcanic England flanker. The bad news is that due to ankle injury, she's been tottering around the studio and will miss the Six Nations. Very sad, but I think talking to Marley, it's partly an insurance policy, Marley, against being fit for the World Cup.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I'm looking to come back for the end of the season, but my eyes are now on next season, 2021, World Cup year, making sure that I'm fit and ready to go again.
We've also got Catherine Spencer. I'd go as far to say a global rugby figure now, former England number 8, and as of this week, an author, and as of several months ago, a mother. This is the first time we've ever prepared for the ruck by making sure that May, Catherine's daughter, is safe and well outside with Catherine's mum. And what a gorgeous girl she is as well.
Oh,
she's absolutely stunning.
She is,
congratulations on that. Congratulations this week on becoming an author with the book Mud Maul Mascara. It is the first book written by a great rugby player from the women's game. I've read it. It is absolutely and incredibly beautiful and thought-provoking. It's one of the best books I've ever read.
Thank you, Steve.
And I'm not saying that because you're on the show. It is. And for all those interested, it'll be available on Amazon next week, Catherine.
Thank you. I'll chuck you that tenner later.
That's all right. Thank you. Is that all? And also in the Sunday Times this Sunday, I'll be talking to Catherine about the book and some of the philosophies in it. So please don't miss that. Marley, how is this England team developing? There are three games on the weekend. They're away in France, which is probably the hardest game they could start off with. How are they developing from your point of view and from what you've seen?
From what I've seen, they're developing well. Obviously, I've not been with them for the last couple of weeks, so they would be new players have obviously come in. They'd be sharpening up in the lineouts, making sure their starter plays are sharp. When the changes come in, the finishers, making sure that they know what they're doing. But I think they'll be looking at themselves. We come off the back of a really good autumn internationals for us. Beating France over in France for the first time in 6 years was massive for us, and then to back it up going down to Exeter and then getting that try in that final minute, it just shows the determination and that mentality of win for us. So I think we won't rely on what happened in the autumns. We know it's going to be a massive test and we've got to show up for. But the girls will be very prepared for that. I think it's a good thing it's an earlier kickoff. So you get up, they do their meetings, they do their activation, they get some food in them and then obviously to the ground. Whereas sometimes when we've played for France previously, it's been a later kickoff, those 8, 9 o'clock kickoffs. And they're the ones that you sat around all day long, not twiddling your thumbs in the mornings. You get up, have breakfast, and then suddenly come 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it's like rush to then play in the game. So I think it'd be a really good game for us. I think we'd be very ready for it.
Giselle, you've coached against or you've coached loads of these new crop of players. Is it the best you've seen, the people coming through? Or is it, are they a generation that we don't know about enough yet?
I think the pathways now for the youngsters are fantastic. And with the TP15s established now and the route through that they've got, their experience of playing alongside the players that they're going to play. So from Amelia Harper's point of view, these players they play against week in, week out now. So instead of it being something that you get called into that you had no experience of at all, they have their talent development pathways that they come through as youngsters, the England 20s. So there's a lot of experience of international camps and preparations for games with groups of players that you don't play week in, week out. And I think they'll just be incredibly excited and really looking forward to being part of it.
I know this is difficult, but have you got any names for us that we might, the bystanders might not know so well that we should look at this year with England?
In terms of the actual current squad, well, I think that the two youngsters that you've already mentioned coming through, the young seven that's been called up because of Marley's injury, I think from England's point of view...
Marley says she's useless, by the way.
I did not say that.
No, she did. That was only a joke.
She played at the weekend against my development squad to get game time and practice because Richard Blaise came down to watch her and Lark Davis play because they're both returning from injury. I think the big issue right across the board there, though, is that there's been a lot of injuries to the back five players for England in recent weeks. So for me, also talking about the youngsters, but Harriet Miller-Mills, obviously I'm her club coach and have travelled the 22-month ACL process with her. So cutting a long story short, she did her ACL, then 5 months into rehab, she did it again.
Yeah.
So had to restart again. Then we got her back on the pitch. She played 2 and a bit games. And then in the warm-up against Bristol, which was her third game back, she felt something pops and then the meniscus had gone. So she had another 12 weeks there. So
you're talking about nearly 2 years out of the game.
2 and a half she's been out of the game. Yeah. And for her to now, I mean, she's played remarkably well. You could see the process that she was going through, getting trust in her body and where she's at. The last two games she's played, which we played against Darlington and Bristol, she was magnificent. Gets herself on the try sheet from typical 8 plays. The one she scored against Bristol was a beautiful support line. And I'm equally as excited to see her back, albeit that she's 50 plus caps already, as I am to see Amelia Harper play.
Well,
I think they're both going to make a massive impact.
Harriet Miller-Mills was actually playing out with skin, I remember, before she was injured. So let's hope she gets the luck with injury she deserves. And the same with Marley when Marley's over hers. Catherine, Six Nations, when it comes up, it's always an exciting time. There are 3 matches, which again, France, England is exciting, so is Wales, Italy. Are we making the best of the Six Nations in terms of profile and things like that? Profile, kickoff times, venues, should they be played just before the man's game, the men's game at the men's stadium? Or how would you, if it was all up to you, would you change it or would you make it better?
Oh, it's getting the nice, easy questions, don't I? I think I do like this question because I unbelievably do have an opinion.
Really?
I know, it's amazing. I think it needs to go one of 2 ways. One, and actually just to put this into context, all 3 women's games are on Sunday this weekend, all played at the same time. And obviously makes it very difficult for viewing purposes. So Women's Six Nations really have to kind of slot in around the men's tournament, be that scheduling, venues and kickoff times and so on. And so the women's game is very much kind of in second place and, you know, it's still growing and there's reasons for that. I think it needs to do one of 2 things. We need to be completely, fully integrated into the Six Nations. We need to be playing at the same stadiums with the men every time. Or actually, do we go completely the other way, separate our way from the Six Nations? We don't necessarily have the best teams in Europe playing in our Six Nations. Spain are above both Ireland and Scotland, I think, in the world rankings at the moment. Mm. Do we actually separate away, completely create an opportunity for new sponsors or any sponsors to come in? A title sponsor would be nice, and step away from the shadows of the men's tournament.
So you go back to, say, April, May or something like that?
Maybe, potentially. Try and, I mean, it's stuttering along, and we are seeing bigger crowds. There's no denying that. But actually, are they big enough? And when you get three games on a Sunday, all played at the same time, in quite challenging venues, we're not heading over to Paris, we're heading to Po, I think is the pronouncement. It doesn't make it easy.
We'll come to Marley in a minute as the current player, but do you think there's a possibility for changing it? Or, I mean, the Six Nations is a massive thing. It's got a massive aura. Should we be ducking and diving a bit and going elsewhere, Giselle?
It's the perceived consequences and then what will come out as unintended consequences that worry me. And from my point of view, the Six Nations is the Six Nations.
Yeah.
It's special.
I do love the Six Nations.
Yeah,
so
yeah. And I just think the energy behind it. So, you know, the TP15 shuts down for 9 weeks, whether that's right or wrong. So there's a question there. If you move the Six Nations somewhere else, then we'll be playing the TP15s all through the Six Nations. Mm-hmm. And the heart of rugby in Europe at that time is the Six Nations. So will the TP15s be recognised, noticed that it's going on? So there's those issues. I agree with you that do we have to have the same six teams in it? And we had a discussion about this last night in my coaching team. And, you know, yes, you've got England and France ahead of the game at the moment. And then in order to keep or to encourage investment from other unions into their women's unions, we were under the impression that maybe the sixth place side at the end of it, the Wooden Spoon, has to play the winner of the next tier down, and the winner of that game takes the Six Nations place the following year.
Well,
I can't see Scotland and Wales and Ireland being happy with the thought that their girls could be relegated from what is a traditional supported Six Nations tournament. So would have to then step up and invest in the way that England and France are investing in their women's sides.
And there's more investment, but also, could he not just add one team every year? Do we have to have six? Could it not be seven? So whoever won it came in?
But then I think you're looking at the scenarios that then that it will be longer, and then you're looking at player welfare. We'll be playing week in, week out, and that can be like a 6-day turnaround.
Yeah.
And then you've got a travel day on that. You've got to look at logistics of things. And for me as a player, Six Nations is one of the best tournaments to play in, and every year it comes round.
Yeah.
Whereas you get a World Cup that comes round once every 4 years. So I think Six Nations, for me, is like, I want it to stay. And logistically, where we play the games and how we play them, as in whether we play them before or after men's games, isn't always right. We don't get those massive crowds, or maybe we don't get the time slot that is on TV. But the thing is, for me as a player, is that I love playing in the Six Nations, so I wouldn't want that to change. And then if we did say we moved away from the men's, where would you put it in the calendar?
Yeah, exactly.
There's a thing like autumn internationals, that's another time of year internationally, whereas for an England player especially, it's a really exciting time.
There is one thing, and surely it's not beyond the wit now of man or woman to fit it in with the main Six Nations. I mean, what they used to do, it would be before all your times, but was that they play England A games, and they'd always be on a Friday afternoon, and where the match was next day, like it'd be Donnybrook in Dublin, it'd be Cardiff at Cardiff Arms Park. And the thing was, thousands of fans were coming over to have a drink and chill out and have a really great day, and they would always go to the games. And I think, in my opinion, they ought to play you on Friday internationals on Friday afternoon, not evening, because it's always dark.
That's sort of where the England 20s men competition sits, isn't it, at the moment? So I think that would be great as people arriving. The day after, when we play on Sundays, People are done, tested, and blown out.
But the thing is, if it's on a Monday, you're probably going to say, well, if I'm going to stay and watch the girls play, I've got to lose a day's work, so I'm not going to be up for the next day. But on Friday, do you know what? They used to get sort of 8,000. I got many, many good ideas like that.
I'm with you on that one.
You could do it is like it's back to back. So like you've got the under 20 boys after the women or before the women. So then they're actually they've got three games all within the same radius of each other. That
and
be
that's
a really good thing.
That's the energy of the Six Nations. And I think if you move us to a different thing that moves the TP15s, and I think Marley's point already, if you look at the commitment level of a England international now, they play 18 TP games, they play autumn internationals, they play the Six Nations, and then a summer tour, and there isn't really a break.
It is not.
And
there's not.
Perhaps is that why? Because now you know we've got all these injuries. The players at the moment are. All the games they play virtually are high-powered games now, which didn't used to be the case in the women's game.
And
now,
that,
it's
and with that,
full
and with like the TP15s and how the league is now, like I know you could talk to any player that plays in the league, but especially us as an England group, we love playing for our clubs. Like we love playing in those games. And you look at the big clashes, and you talk about the Harlequin Saris game, but. That for me as a player, that is just as good as me going and playing in some of those Six Nations games.
I think the men would say the same.
With the physicality, the way we play, those score lines. And it's a battle from the whistle to that 80th minute. It's not any runaway games now.
Marley, let me just ask you another question. This, I'm not meaning to trip you up, but say you can play it.
I got one leg.
You can play it. Mind you, you're pretty easy to trip up.
If you're going to get her, it's now.
I asked Catherine the same question. Twickenham is the home of the whole of rugby.
England
rugby. It's the founding father union of the whole game. It's a magnificent stadium. Some people like it, some people maybe don't. But when you're on a freezing cold night after the men have gone at Twickenham, it's got a certain down factor as well. Say when you go to Exeter, you get an amazing, absolutely amazing crowd. And I am not trying to trip you up. I'm not saying you're going to turn your back on Twickenham, but is it swings and roundabouts? Do you love one and love the other? Or is it lovely to be playing in front of a mad bunch of Devonians?
Obviously, it's good amazing to go back down to Exeter. That's like my hometown, like my home. Mm. So it's amazing to go down and fill a stand. But then there is that aura of playing at Twickenham, of the home of English rugby. So it's really hard to weigh up. But for us at the moment, England going on the road to go to different stadiums. We've been up to Doncaster. Mm. We played at Bedford's game, at Bedford Stadium. Mm. I think for us, it puts us more on the map. We get crowds in that maybe wouldn't have come and watched women's rugby, and we are getting sell-out crowds. Obviously, we need to look for bigger stadiums to make sure, because obviously we went from playing at Exeter to then playing at Bedford, which the capacity was quite different. Mm. But at the same time, that feeling of that whole crowd behind you, it's amazing. It makes your hair stand on end.
Kath, what would be your view? The glory of playing at Twickenham, or people behind you, people going mad behind you?
The last time for me this came up as a kind of a bit of a big topic was in 2010 when we had our home World Cup. And leading into that tournament, my thoughts, we should be playing at Twickenham, you know, World Cup final, we should be playing there and we should be aiming high with our spectator numbers. In the end, the decision was made to play at the Twickenham Stoop. And we did pretty much sell out the stadium. Yeah. There were ticket touts. It's so exciting, you know, like, not very moral, but, you know, it was exciting. It's a step in women's rugby. So it felt amazing. You say, you know, you played in front of a sellout crowd. But it's Twickenham. There's something really special about playing there. And, you know, I think goes back to our conversation before, you know, how can we change the Six Nations? Can we, you know, put in promotion, relegation? Can we add some consistency, always have games on a Friday or something? So actually, we're building those crowds at Twickenham. The aim is to have a really good crowd, I think, at Twickenham, isn't it? That being said, I think it is good to take the game around the country. I think, Marley, you're exactly right. We shouldn't be going to stadiums with a capacity of 5,000. We should be aiming higher.
I think that's a gist, like 100% from myself, but we've got to aim high and we've got to make those crowds come in. But if we're looking at the women's game, like you have to sell seats for then sponsors to look at you and want to invest in the game and stuff. And Twickenham's amazing to play up. The pitch is like a carpet, and it's an amazing feeling. And you've done it, Kath, where you've gone out just after the men's game to warm up for your international, and you come out again, and the stadium's nearly empty being full. Mm. And you still got that, oh my God, you're playing at Twickenham, but actually it empties out quite quickly.
There's nothing more than disheartening, is there?
But then at the same time,
but a lot of them don't know that it's on, so it's marketing as well.
But then at the same time, I feel like where we're going to play at these other stadiums, people are coming to watch us, and they're not having to pay X amount or have to get into central London, or not central, but Twickenham, on a match day when there is going to be tens of thousands of people there.
Again, I think they got it all wrong. I just think it's so easy to change. I think they should put you on before. But anyway,
but there's still people that don't know the women's game are playing after the men, and that's
part of the problem as well. And also they shut half the stadium. Giselle, can I just ask you? We're talking about the international game. You were commentating on the summer series, mm-hmm. okay? For the development of the game, when I read about this, I thought, God, this is just what they want. And I still think probably on the field it might have been, but it just looked terrible on TV. It looked awful on TV. Sorry, we should just explain what the summer series is. It's a five-team series which was played last year in North America.
The best five teams
in the world. Yeah, sorry.
So you had the best five teams in the world, and hence pretty much the best players in the world running around on a field in San Diego, changing out of marquee tents. Yeah. Now, yes, I agree with you. The concept of having those five teams and competing, fantastic, great for the players, great to move the standard of the women's game on, but the venue's not. And I think, you know, going back to the discussion we've just had, we have to be aware of where the game is at this moment in time, but we also have to be aspirational in order to move it forward. And, you know, we have a model in front of us of women's football who recently, so early doors, they weren't getting things right. Things were all over the place. Now, recently, I think they've been spot on. So, you know, in terms of how they're supporting their club rugby, because in order to get people into international rugby, you have to make the club players become household names. You have to make the TP15s out there for people to see. And the crowds at TP15s are not really there because a lot of people know that it's happening. So, you know, in the particular areas, and I think clubs need a lot of support with that area, because for me at Wasps, I don't have a massive budget that I can then invest in commercial and media to get everything out there. I just haven't got that. Quins do a very good job because they have got that, and they use their men's marketing system. I don't have that. So the clubs need massive support in publicising this. And if you look at the football, the week that they had an international week, so when the players have got international, the Premier League stops. So what they marketed, and it didn't come from the clubs, it came from the FA, was, right, your women are wearing the same shirt. They wear the same badge as the team of the men. Please come and support them. And they advertised the game. Well, down at Spurs, at the new ground, they had 33,000 people rock up to watch the women play because of that campaign. And OK, albeit the following week, they weren't there. Mm. More were there than were there before.
Sure.
So that support coming in raises that level. Out in San Diego, great idea, but no, they didn't get it. They didn't put it in the right place. But then you look at American rugby, and it's not their first major sport. They don't have the same support systems around it, so they drew everyone in together and set up that issue. But you wouldn't have had the top five men's teams in those circumstances.
No.
And the work that the athletes do at that level is equal to the men, and many of those athletes are also holding down full-time jobs.
Yeah.
So I feel that we've got to know where we are. We've got to be aspirational, but we've got to pay the respect to the athletes that are competing.
Yeah, doesn't someone have to say from centrally to increase the marketing budget, even if it's Twickenham
if
it's not in England?
That's what I feel that I need. Yes, we get a bit of finance to run all of this stuff, but we are running at the moment 60 players in competitions nationally across the country. Yeah. So getting people to travel, when I stay overnight, when we've gone miles away, it's very expensive, and we're all trying to put these together. I have to put my priority funding into the performance on the field at the moment. I can't put it into the bells and whistles around it, because the first thing I have to do is make sure the product on the field is worthy of watching. Yes, 100%. I think we need a proper marketing strategy across the league that raises its profile. And I'm telling you now, some of the games I've seen are incredible. Amazing club games. Yeah. I mean, as we say, the Sarries Quins one was absolutely extraordinary. We played Bristol at the weekend. Fabulous standard being played there.
I actually thought the thing in America was fabulous standard. If you'd magicked a hologram of crowds around it, you would have thought this is fantastic. As it turned out, they didn't even have a camera for the TMO.
Oh, it was awful. And the France England game in at Sandy Park, finishing in the last minute with that try. Unbelievable game of rugby.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Kath, I can put 2 points to you. First of all, we're talking about the general good of the international game. Were you disappointed that the World Cup is, for some baffling reasons, not 16 teams, the next World Cup? And also, well, let me ask you that first. Should it surely be 16 now?
Yeah, it should. And it should have been last tournament, I think. I understand previously to that it was 12 teams, and that's fair enough. And actually, probably in 2014, it was lucky. Well, it was not lucky. It was good in a way for England that it was a 12-team tournament. Mm. But yeah, absolutely, it has to be 16 teams now. It's got to, you know, people keep telling us that the women's game is growing globally. That's that sits at the top of the women's game. Surely it's got to demonstrate that as well.
Let me ask you one more question regarding the forthcoming Six Nations. Now, Wales, Scotland, Ireland and Italy are making massive efforts to improve. But at the moment, there are two teams who in the betting are way out ahead. Do you think that England actually need these other countries to improve so they're playing with intensity every week of the Six Nations?
Yeah, I think England needs it. I think they need it for themselves as well. Yeah. You know, we always talk about it, don't we, from a England perspective. And of course, you know, they're always trying to improve all the time. England are in a fortunate position, obviously, aren't they? They've gone professional, but they're kind of leading the way, and other teams kind of need to do this as well. And actually, going back to Giselle's earlier point, if we did have promotion relegation, that kind of forces the issue then, doesn't it? Otherwise, their teams will disappear, and I don't think any of those teams will allow that to happen.
I'm going to give you one name. And tell me what you think. Lions.
I've spoken about this before. I think it's an amazing concept, but I don't feel the women's game, again, as I've already said, we need to know where we are currently right now. And if you put the best of the British nations together, who do they play? And the only team at the moment that I could see that happening is New Zealand. Now, you can't take them to South Africa because each nation would probably beat South Africa at this moment in time on their own, as would in Australia. It would be competitive with a couple of nations, but that would be it. So again, it has to work straight off, and the way that I look at this at this moment in time, running at the same time as the Lions, whatever, that we do a Northern versus Southern Hemisphere, and there you get people, you get players who are little gems in their nations but haven't got the support systems around them, haven't got, you know, enough of the team to really
that's a no for now.
It's in a different way, so not a British Lions but a concept similar to that could run at the same time.
Okay, just put
a no in terms of.
So when you say Northern Hemisphere, it's like Six Nations teams.
Plus, well, you divide the globe. But you divide the globe as you see appropriate to become an unbelievably competitive three series.
But the thing is,
you could put Canada and America with Australia, New Zealand, and you could.
Just to take a ride on the back of the line, so say, right, we're going to put a Lions team together, so the first tour will be in 2 years to New Zealand, where we know it would be fantastic. Then South Africa and Australia know they've got 6 years and or 10 years, because it's only every 4 years, to get it right. I just think that the girls need a chance to get that jersey on, like they did with the Barbarians.
Marley,
obviously you'd like to wear the jersey, but say you could wear it, in 2 years you'd have a tour which would be fantastic, not good for TV up here, but then you can move it on and everybody else is on a high alert for the Lions. So every South African elite player goes out to train is going to have it in mind in 4 years' time we could play against them. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, definitely. It'd be something that is amazing, but I think I agree with Giselle that it's in concept where we've got to be ready for it.
Yeah.
And the teams that we're playing to be ready for it. Like, I think it'd be a great tour off the field. It'd be great.
Nice to know you're still the same, Marley.
Yeah, no. But
Marley, they don't do all that anymore.
They don't know.
Okay. Tell you what, we'd really be bringing back a tradition for the old star Lions to us, blimey. Okay, well, Lions a little bit of a back burner thing at the moment. Let's talk about Premier 15s. We're in our third year, as far as I can see, and you've all appear to have agreed, with the exception of your problem with Aylesford, who you wish. I read your book. At the end of when it started, they said at the end of 3 years they'd have a look at it. And they decide should other teams come in, who should go in, who should go out. Where is it for you now in terms of are they looking for other teams, and do we really want to lose anyone? I mean, forward Waterloo at the bottom at the moment, but do we really want to relegate them? Team up in with Burnsy's team up in the northwest.
Just because it's Burnsy's team, we can't, yeah. Oh, okay. It's difficult, isn't it? I mean, we've got other teams, haven't we, wanting to come in. And
Exeter
obviously, yeah, is the sort of the most known name at the moment, wanting to. And looking at the bigger picture, I think it's a good thing. I think Harlequins have shown a club with the resources, and Giselle mentioned earlier, what a difference that can make. You know, they've got 5,000 to their club game, didn't they? Standalone club game. And it shows what we can do with resources. And now not every club at the moment has that, hardly any clubs have that amount of resource at the moment. So yeah, we do need these other rugby brands, if you like, and Exeter is one, coming into the women's premiership. That's going to help lift the premiership, which is going to help with international rugby, which is going to help the global game. You know, it's the women's rugby is quite a small world still, so you know, and I've been there, and I've been involved with clubs who've kind of disappeared because of other teams coming into the premiership. Waterloo is one of those clubs that we all love, partly, mainly because of Burnsy, Jill Burns, who is an absolute goddess legend. Yeah. Bow down to her. But do they, you know, are they known enough? Do they have the resources? Can they go to that next step in the Premiership? Can they grow their game on and off the pitch?
We'll leave the last word on this to Giselle. But Marley, you're obviously enjoying it, the competition. You're saying that, you know, your friends and your colleagues like it as much as anything that they do. How can it go forward now?
It's a tough one because obviously every game is a challenging game now. So maybe in the first season it came in that you would play your Waterloos or your Worcesters and you would put big scores on them.
You'd leave a few players out, sort of thing.
Yeah, kind of thing. But now, like every game, you have to turn up. You cannot take your foot off the gas. So I think whatever happens for next season, right now for me as a player, like, that's out of my hands. I just got to make sure that I keep ticking the boxes for Saracens in making sure that we're in a strong enough stead to stay in the league, because I don't think it's a case of relegation. I think it's a case of if you're hitting targets around other areas. But for me, as a player, I'm just concentrating on playing the best rugby I can and putting Saracens in the best stead.
Fair enough. Giselle, where should it go now? You're closest and wisest about this than probably anyone around. What should they do?
I'm going to be perhaps a bit more brutal about this, in that we're talking about the women's game and being aspirational and driving it forward and wanting people to come and watch. And we've had 3 years now as 10 clubs to set up high performance based environments on relatively limited budget. Some of us have been more successful with that than others, and you reach a point where we knew we had 3 years to do this. And I know Marley says that it is competitive. It is, but there is a gap. And if you look at the men's premiership, people talk about it being one of the best leagues in the world because on any given day, A can beat B.
Yeah.
In the women's game at the moment, that is not the case. And I'm being brutally honest about that. That is not the case. And as the director of rugby at Wasps, wrongly or rightly, I turn up to games knowing roughly we're going to have a really hard time today. This is going to be fantastic and competitive. We're going to win this game.
Or you're going to win,
win this game. Now, we're moving on and we are moving on, and I believe there's going to be some announcements next week to explain as and where we are, of which I'm not in a position to obviously say that right now.
Spoil sport.
But we are in a process of we've reached the end of 3 years.
Yeah.
It was agreed that there wouldn't be promotion or relegation for those 3 years, but that there would be an assessment process.
Just let me ask you this, if you can answer the question. If you're relegated, where'd you go to? Are they going to have a second rank?
Well, again, there is some pretty big changes afoot.
Okay.
And, you know, in order to continue to build the game, we needed 3 years, and it doesn't necessarily mean it has to go to promotion relegation, but we have a three-year cycle, is how the TPs is.
Okay.
So we're at the end of that three-year cycle and changes are afoot, and then we'll go into another three-year cycle, which, again, we have to be aspirational. We have to aspire that on any given day, I, as the director of Wasps Ladies, don't rock up thinking, I've got this. So, and we don't get into a situation where it's like, well, you know, the big discussion at the moment is we've got a 9-week break because of the Six Nations. If at this current moment in time you said, right, we'll continue to play league games during this period of time, because of the way that the league is, if I, as Wasps, were to play Saracens, Quins and Loughborough during the Six Nations, I'd have a great time. If Gloucester has to play them after, and Gloucester and us are the ones that are head-for-head going for that fourth spot, if Gloucester have to play them when all their internationals are back, that's not integrity of the league, because Wasps are going to get situations, if I take all three of those during the Six Nations, because it fell that way, we're going to be where maybe we shouldn't be.
Okay.
And therefore, we have to be in a position like the men's game. Everyone says, well, the men's game can play. Well, that's because of the differences around their squads, and they can beat each other on any given day, and they are aware of having to develop players right across.
Okay,
well, and that's where we're at.
Let's hope that the governing body do a much better job than the shambles of Premiership rugby. You should be driven off the face of the earth. Can we just crack on now? I'll just ask you, before we come back to the Six Nations and our predictions, can I just ask you this? If you're at a local rugby club, which I do, which I am, I go around to see them, and then I go to other little clubs because my son's either coach or play there. You cannot believe the torrent of young girls who come in to play. One year you've lost all your players because they've gone to a big hub club, which is fine. Next year you go there and you've got another team there. Like in Reading, I've been to three clubs recently, and they're like worker ants. The numbers are unbelievable.
She's amazing.
Does that get through to you?
Mm-hmm.
What about you? Because you know you've been to places where, like Folkestone, where you lost players upwards and all that. But these kids are just out of this world, and they don't seem to take 6 weeks before they get into contact either. They just charge in.
No fear.
That's just fear.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
That's all because it's the only sport where you can pick up the ball and run with it until someone stops you. And more and more girls are finding the thrill of that, of actually being able to express yourself on the field and to do your thing until somebody stops you.
But the thing is, there's one club I know that I went to see them, and they had about eight girls. Then the next season they had 20 odd. Now they've got two teams. And they've got a kind of social media platform. They're always in the local paper. Thank God, they're much better than these rugby players. Much better than the blokes.
Oh, obviously, it's unbelievable.
Don't sound surprised.
It comes about down to like one or two volunteers who are really driving that within the club.
Yeah.
And without that, it doesn't succeed. A bit like, in boys and men's rugby. But what we're seeing now is more and more people are willing to take that on and yeah. and set up girls teams, whether they've got, you know, daughters or not in the club or not. You know, it's just another part of rugby, another team to develop. So I think that's the key. There's more volunteers driving the girls game, and you know, and these young girls have got heroes that they get to see on TV.
Well, that's the
big thing in women's sport at the moment. If you can see it, you can be it.
Yeah,
and exactly. And now and it may be cliche, but it is as it
so
is.
True.
So they're watching on the TV now. The likes of Marley running around the place, causing chaos, and games are closer, more competitive. They're very compelling. There's a lot of running rugby in them, and the young girls are looking at it. And then the Red Roses are. This is where I think they're absolutely amazing. After a game, you see them signing autographs to anyone and everyone who's asking for one for as long as it takes.
Yes, I know.
And the youngsters are just like, I met Marley Packer today. Yeah. I met, you know,
Poppy
Cleal. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And that is, that they become part of it, and it's exciting.
Marley, do you sense it's like there's been a boom? You sense the boom is actually growing?
Yeah, definitely. It's always on the up. For me, obviously being part of the England squad since 2014, it's been massive, and each year it keeps on growing. And then I go back to like my local club in Yeovil, and they've got a women's team there. And recently in the summer, me and Rachel Burford did a Rachel Burford Academy camp there. And then she went back there actually last week and did another one. But one of those girls that I was coaching in the summer, Rachel, she's now made her way into the Bristol Bears team. And so to see that, it's phenomenal, because the growth of the women's game, and it keeps coming through. Like when I was back there a good 15 years ago now, playing in that under 16s girls, that's still growing, and those players are still coming on and being able to get up into the good level of TP15s.
Okay, I know there's frustrations, and the things don't happen as quickly as we'd all like, but at least that's something that's pushing us all from the bottom now. I just want to go on, get back to the Six Nations. I need your predictions now, ladies. I'd like you to know who you think is going to win between France and England, and who thinks is going to win the title. We'll start with Marley.
How did I know you were going to do that to me? I'm back the girls the whole way, England.
England to win in Po?
England to win in Po.
Okay, what about the other games? Ireland probably ahead in Scotland?
Scotland have just come off of a win, so they have their towels up. So yeah. I think it'd be a really good game, but I think Ireland will just have the edge. Edge over the game.
Wales. Every time I see a Welsh team, I panic. Every time I see the Welsh team, every time I see a Welsh squad, ladies' squad announced, they're always announcing we got 46 new players who never played before. Well, this is meant to be the Six Nations. You don't want 46 new players who never played before. Kath, predictions, please. France, England this weekend.
Oh, I'm just going to move away from Marley slightly, but still keeping my head near the microphone. I think because it's in France.
Yeah,
I actually think France might win. There's been some really England have, you know, won the last four, I think, but there's been some really close games, and I actually think because it's in France, I think France.
Okay, Giselle. Giselle, casting vote.
So for me, I have to talk. So it's interesting. You've obviously gone player and what have you. My heart would obviously want England every time, but the way that England beat France in the last game was a moment of mental madness from the French. Absolute mental madness. And as a coach, when any team I coach loses for in that way, they learn so much. So much. And I think the French there will look at that and just be like, how and out in Po with the injuries that we've got, I'm going France.
Right, blimey.
The one.
Sorry, Marley.
Blimey.
That's okay.
I'd love England to win, my heart, obviously.
Yeah, with them,
but my head and my coaching and my looking at what happened.
Right, okay.
And I also think we learnt a lot from that game as well.
You learn more when you lose than you do when you win.
Yeah, I know.
We now have to name our gods or goddesses of the week. I'm sure you've thought about these. We'll start this time with Giselle.
I've already mentioned her. I've been on the journey with Harriet Miller-Mills of the 2.5 years rehab. I've never seen anyone work so hard, cope with disappointment, and as a player, it doesn't get any more disappointing than 5 months down the road after ACL it goes again. And many, many players would have rolled over and said, this isn't for me. And then when she got it again with the meniscus going, and for her to be selected, and me seeing the rehab journey, the effort, and to watch Hard Work Be Rewarded. Harriet Miller Mills is my goddess of the week.
That's a good one.
That's really annoying, because that was going to be mine too.
No, that's okay, you can have the same one.
But that's okay, but I'm going to have another one. So my goddess of the week is going to be my mum, a.k.a. granny, for coming to look after my little one so I could be here.
That's a good
one. That's a bit soppy, isn't it?
That's a good one, yeah. I just hope the office hasn't been trashed outside there. But
she hasn't done anything on her nappy, but we won't talk about that now.
I'm going to go Poppy Cleo. A couple of reasons. Start of the season, she had an operation and she's worked really hard to get back from that, and this is her time to shine, obviously, in the Six Nations. And she sorted me out football tickets to watch Liverpool play, so she's done well.
Does she not like you then?
No, she knows how much I love them, so yeah, no, she's done really well this week.
My goddess of the week is someone I've never met and never seen play, Morwenna Tallin. If you're 17 and you're playing in the front five, or you're contending for the front five at international level, you must be some player, and that is way too young, but it's also really exciting. So there's some good goddesses there. I think we'll have to call it a draw, because each goddess, we usually name one, but each goddess is roughly about the same. Ladies, thanks so much for coming on. Catherine, wish you huge sales with Mud Mall Mascara.
Me too.
Please, everybody, there'll be more about the book in the Sunday Times this week. Marley, we wish you total recovery and many more games of magnificent World Cup, because joking apart, you'll be embarrassed by this, but you are one of England's greats, all-time greats,
an
absolutely fabulous flanker. And let's hope you get back to 101%. Giselle, I wish you many more tankards. You can stick them up on your own.
Thank you.
I wish you, I think you need one to go up one step to be in the top four with Wasps.
Correct.
I wish you well with that. And if any other major jobs come your way, well, you'll get a massive amount of support, and I hope they do.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you ever so much. That's the end of the Ruck. We'll be back on Monday with someone called Lawrence Dallaglio in charge after an absolutely fantastic weekend. France and England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales and Italy in men's and women's, and what could be better?